Mark My Words shares Mark Homer's contrarian views on investing, business, finance, economics, and all things money. Mark interviews the world's most successful business, finance, and money experts, as well as imparting his knowledge in a factual, direct, and no-nonsense manner. Welcome to Mark My Words. And here is your host, Mark Homer.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon again. Okay, so this is a Q&A session. You can just ask, you know, me any questions that you've got, any queries, things you're concerned about, things you're not sure about. Every time someone asks a question, everybody else gets to hear the answer, so that generates sort of more questions and obviously gives them answers to questions that they probably had but didn't ask. So, should benefit us all. So, who's got the first question? Fire away, Clive.
Coming up to refinancing, who are the best companies to refinance with right now?
Your house to HMO type, yeah.
Commercial.
The two I would use, because I do your model quite a lot, I would use Lloyds or I'd use Metro Bank. Those are the two that I would use for that. Both of them are cheap, good value, sort of 3% type.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use the one on 1 Southampton Row. Yeah. So I don't, Metro Bank were just in the M25. When we first went to them, probably 2011, they were just sort of stretching out and they agreed to do a block of flats here. They wouldn't do sort of a load of HMOs. Now I've been talking to them about doing a load of cluster flats, HMOs, all that, and they seem quite happy. They're a lot more aggressive now. You can go to others. There are obviously Shawbrook, people like that, but they'll probably charge you double. And from my experience, they probably ask twice as many questions as well. So it depends how much sort of time you want to spend on the remortgage.
Have you ever heard of Redwood Bank?
No. Redwood? There's always these new ones popping up. Is it? Give them a go. Cambridge and Counties have been good over the years as well for a lot of people. Although, I think they've...
to bridge with them and they will do it for us.
Yeah, but they want 6%, 7%, do they? Yeah. Metro and Lloyds will charge you more like 3%. Yeah.
They only got its banking licence on the 10th of April, Clive.
That's good. They'll be right in there.
Does that...
Redwood
Bank. Does that mean they're sort of...
That's what it just said.
Early doors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They might need business, so they might be aggressive. Who knows?
Well...
They're coming to see us.
Well, I mean, Metro were quite, you know, 2012, something like that. They were really sort of on it. They were reasonably careful, but they were really hungry, and now they're double hungry, because I suspect they've got a load of money off a load of depositors, because, you know, they're opening late, and there's all sorts of reasons why people will deposit their money there, because they're easier to deal with. So a lot of the time, I find when these new challenger ones open, they're good for a few years, and then for some reason, they always turn a bit sour. I don't know whether it's that they have a load of impairments or they realise that there are issues with certain lending models, or they get big enough loan book, they get what they want, and then they just take the best stuff. But I remember Aldermore used to be way easier than the others in the credit crunch, and I'd say that they're just the opposite now. And they're very expensive because they have to get the money in, I think, from wholesale market rather than depositors. Yeah.
Hi, Mark.
I see him about once a month at the moment.
they're actually publishing, they're not putting their rates on, but they're actually giving their criteria on their website.
What, Redwood?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, with this commercial type, you know, commercial lending on this sort of stuff, generally they don't have a criteria published in the same way, but that can be a good thing. You know, I find with those sort of lenders, you know, Lloyds or maybe RBS would do it now as well. I haven't tried them, but they're very good with development finance now. They seem to be more flexible. Yeah. I'd try Cambridge and Counties as well, though.
Well, as I said, we had a reval off them at the beginning when we got the bridging, so I know that's there.
They've done the bridging, have they?
They did the bridging.
Yeah, okay. So you prefer to go someone else anyway, because usually, it shouldn't be like this, but most relationship managers I have, they all say the same thing. if you've done the original bridging or development loan with a bank, often it's easier to go to a new bank because they'll lend you more money. Because often the original bank will only lend you 70% of whatever, do you know what I mean? Whereas often a new bank coming in will forget what you've spent and sort of go, all right, this is what it's worth, we'll give you 70%, 60-70% of that. Yeah, it's always been the way. Okay, so next question. Far away.
So I've been to talks before where you've spoken about your cluster flat model.
Yes.
Pubs to
yeah. Or any commercial building.
Commercial.
Yeah.
Now, you've done quite a few of these pubs now. Do you tend yeah. to buy the assets subject to planning for the initial sort of flats? Or do you?
Yeah, they usually won't accept that. They usually want an unconditional offer. You know, if it's a popular site, they'll go with someone who's unconditional for 20 grand less anyway, or depends on the purchase price. 10% less, they'll probably take from someone else who's unconditional. Yeah. Because it can really elongate it.
That's worth doing with land as well. Like put an offering to secure something and then quick just get
the thing with land is you need to do surveys as well. So, and the surveys cost quite a lot of money. So you probably, it's more acceptable to have an option or do it subject to surveys, subject to ground conditions, all that sort of stuff. I know some people who around here who do just agree them and then just spend a load of money on surveys and just do it at their risk, because a lot of the time they're losing out on sites to other developers because the other developers are coming in and going, no, it's unconditional, but it's never unconditional. They always,
I suppose if you know your area, you know
the yeah, that's exactly a good reason to do it in the same areas over and over again. But it's definitely more acceptable to always try and do it subject to surveys and all that sort of stuff. But what they'll do, they'll do the surveys anyway and then say, oh, we did the surveys and it's found this, this and this, you need to knock this off. You know what I mean? Just for exchange. Yeah. Because often you find things under the ground. Whereas with, you know, buildings there, like Damien's talking about, it's not such a, you haven't got the same issues, the different issues. Yeah. It's more just planning. You don't, you know, you're not, obviously the building's already there, isn't it?
But the impact would say that depending on the use, what it was used for, because I think I looked at a site.
What, contamination?
Yeah, I looked at a site and I can't remember what they were doing, but there's a lot of oil on the ground.
Yeah.
It was mechanics.
Yeah. Yeah, and that can affect the PD as well. Yeah. So, you may want to get that cleaned up before the planning officer goes out. But what I would say is you can use land remediation relief. So you can claim 150% of the cost of fixing or decontaminating the site. So petrol station is a perfect example. They have all the tanks underneath. Lots of developers don't buy them because of all the cost of taking the tanks out and sorting them out. But you can use land remediation relief. It's 150% of the cost of putting it right. You get a surveyor out. But yeah, contamination is quite, it is an important point, yeah.
Yeah, but how would you qualify for that, assuming like the planning officer isn't aware, or that you have to make...
No, the onus is not on you to make a planning officer aware of
correct
problems. That's his job. I mean, a lot of the time it'll be, you know, on a search or something like that. But I mean, if it's just oil sort of on a forecourt, that's unlikely to come up in any search. So you might be able to clean that up. Do you see what I mean? Before any. Yeah. They'll usually come out and have a look at the site.
Okay.
Yeah.
The other thing I would say is if you have a look at any planning applications that have been in the local area. So, for example, one that we're involved with, the area is known just down the road from being in an area that had arsenic on the ground.
Yeah.
Okay.
So even though it was prior approval, they still asked for a desktop study to start with.
Yeah.
We had on our one, we were in a critical drainage area, and despite it not being a requirement, they insisted.
Flood risk.
Upon the flood, an FRA, flood risk assessment.
Yeah. Next question. Do I think crowdfunding is going to change lending? So, as in, is it going to make it sort of easier?
Yeah.
Yeah. I suspect that it already has added competition, and you probably noticed how much keener the banks are now. Obviously, a lot of that is because their balance sheets are repaired largely, but a lot of it is just competition. So, example, like with that, I've said to the other bank, I've said, well, if it's 3 months, I'm going to go to another lender. And straight away, they're like, whoa, 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 you know, we'll sort it out. Whereas if I'd said that 3 or 4 years ago, they would probably have just sort of gone, yeah, fine. So, yeah, I think that, you know, that's definitely increased that situation. I suspect, though, in the medium term, the FCA are going to introduce more regulation around crowdfunding, because I think under the surface, in some areas, there's quite a lot of losses for the people who put the money in. Yeah. I don't think it's all out on the surface yet, but I think it's happening. Right. Yeah. It's been a bit easy, hasn't it?
Do you see it kind of mid-term, short-term? When do you think it's going to
be? I think the FCA have got a review out at the moment, haven't they? And they're creating new rules, and they'll be different. You know, there's two sides to it, aren't there? There's equity funding,
yeah,
and then there's sort of loans or mortgages. And I suspect the equity stuff's maybe the more risky stuff. Maybe they'll introduce more, you know, the most regulation around that. But I think they're probably going to do more on both. Yeah. As in, they're offering both.
Right, no, using both in a scheme. So using the lending from crowdfunding.
Yeah. People do, don't they? Yeah.
So it is, okay. So
people have done, yeah, because they'll offer, they call it MES, don't they? Or, you know what I mean? So you'll, and then stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they'll do some first charge lending, and then maybe, I don't know, a little bit more lending on top of that at a higher rate. And then often, some of those bridging lenders, some of the partners will then put equity in. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So Zorin do that quite a lot. Yeah, bridging. Yeah, they'll if it's a good scheme, then they'll get partners to put cash in. Yeah, it's obviously much more expensive, the equity portion.
Yeah.
The you know, the first charge, the bridge bit, or the, you know, the first charge debt is a lot cheaper. Next question. So when's the next crash? When's the next correction? So this is a really common question, and of course I'd love to know too. It's one of those impossible questions, isn't it? But I mean, let's say the last cycle was 14 years, wasn't it? And let's say the cycle before was 10, and I think the cycle before that was maybe 8, 9, 10, something like that. Well, this cycle now, we're probably about 7 years in. So we're sort of past halfway, probably, aren't we? But A, you don't know how long it is. And, well, yeah, you don't know how long it is. That's because, of course, what happens is all these imbalances and problems and stupid lending and, you know, things that shouldn't happen, and they build up when you're further into the cycle and you're further away from the last crash. But just because that happens, it doesn't mean that that automatically creates a crash. It will eventually create a crash, but you need, you know, a sort of match at, you know, a point, a strike to actually happen. And obviously last time it was, I don't know, mortgage-backed securities, and the time before it was ERM crisis and interest rates went up. That was the thing, that was like the straw that broke the camel's back last time, or those two times. But if they hadn't happened, a year later or 2 years later, something else would have happened and would have created that chain reaction. It'll happen with Bitcoin and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure. Hey, I'm not saying there's not a lot of money to be made there. I'm sure there is. But it'll go, you know, a bit like .com. There'll be some which do really well. There'll probably be an Amazon and a Google in there as well, I would have thought. But there'll be sort of 18 Jellyworks, which I bought at 5p and were worth a quid by tea time, and then the next morning they were bust, and I lost my whole student loan and all that stuff. Yeah.
So yeah. Mine, I guess, in terms of anticipation of any kind of correction like that,
yeah.
What kind of things are you doing specifically, or do you try to do?
So Yeah, as you, I think, as you move further into the cycle, you probably don't want to have loads of developments which you're building out and you've got loads of properties you need to sell, because they're the people that do get hit during those periods. Yeah. So I think it's probably a good idea as you get further into the cycle to maybe you are still developing, but you're just not exposed to loads of units that you need to sell. I think you know, if you're doing stuff that can be finished and rented, so you guys are doing office blocks, I know you're selling them, but if you suddenly wanted to rent them all out, well, they're sort of low enough value, aren't they, where you could just let them, and that's quite a good...
They're certainly paid from sales.
Yeah.
A bit of a margin.
Yeah. So that's a good escape route, a good backup. Whereas if you're developing 500 grand, million pound houses, it's going to be a problem, isn't it? So I think you probably have that sort of in mind. I think also you probably want to spread a little bit. I think the stock market's probably had quite a good run now. So last week I have an ISA. I put my ISA in money in every year. I've been doing it since I was 16. And I sold quite a few of my equity-based funds, which are, you know, in shares in the FTSE, and I've gone into gold and UK gilt, you know, government bonds, which are gilts. I bought into a gold fund and a gilt fund. Might not be the right thing to do. You might not have a correction in the stock market for quite a while, but just feels like to me now it's fully valued. So. Yeah, there may be a bit of upside, but there's probably not that much upside versus the potential downside. So, it's weighted that way, isn't it?
So a bit of diversification.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cash flow, strength of your cash flow.
Yeah.
All right. Are you doing?
Yeah, that's a better way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you building up? I know you like to talk about reserves. Are you building up your war chest?
I will be. I haven't yet. Obviously bought some buildings and I'm not fully into all that yet, but I will be doing, yes, hopefully that'll start towards the end of the year as I've got I'm able to refinance. I've had to put some cash into some purchases recently, but then that'll start coming back again, but yeah, I think it'd be a good idea, because I remember, I mean, if I look back now at our purchases, let's say we started buying, I don't know, together maybe 11 years ago. If I look at all the purchases over that time, the stuff we bought in 09, 10, 11, it just sticks out like a sore thumb, because it's all half, do you know what I mean? All those little houses, they were very, very cheap. It'll all happen again, I would have thought. It'll be something you're not thinking of. It always is, isn't it? It's totally something they don't predict. Because if they predict it, you know, and there's anything really, there's a weight of opinion around it, or, you know, people at the Bank of England and all that, they'll work out a mechanism to protect against it, won't they? So, you know, like the banks were right at the centre of the last one, and that's what elongated a lot of it. They've done loads of work now, haven't they, to split the risky part of banks off from the bits that lend us money and we put our savings into, and they've stopped a lot of sort of silly mortgage lending, and they made it illegal and all that stuff. I think they've dealt with a lot of it. You know, they made them hold a lot more capital. It's not coming from that direction, I don't think. It's something you... I mean, did Clause 24 and all the mortgage interest relief stuff, anyone predict that? There must have been 50 other predictions that I'd seen that never came about. That... One morning you'll get up and it'll be just something you're not, and of course there'll be different ingredients, so it'll be a different cake at the end.
Is there anything in your mind that you do think could potentially, so last time it was the banks?
Well, interest rates going up always causes a load of problems, yeah. Doesn't it? But it just doesn't look very likely, does it?
It's got to be a slow process, isn't it?
It still feels like a slow process, yeah.
But when they start increasing, they
yeah.
do it generally.
Yeah. I mean, even the US is doing way better than we are, isn't it? That's probably at the forefront of growth at the moment. Their rates are still in the ones. The EU started to come around now. A lot of Italy's doing really well, and a lot of the manufacturing figures recently are doing much better. But obviously the rate of increase in interest rates in the Eurozone, they're talking about maybe starting to put them up, but still looks shallow. you know, in terms of the increases. But I don't know, that could change. Don't know. Don't seem to, do they? No. I think if they put interest rates up, consumer spending will just fall off a cliff, won't it?
Right, yeah.
Yeah. No. Just seems to be a new zone we're in, doesn't it? Yeah. Maybe they will tickle them up over time. I think they will, but it just seems to take time. I don't know. You don't know what the Donald's going to do, do you? I don't know. This North Korea thing, I do sometimes, because I subscribe to the FT, and I was reading again this morning, and sometimes I think maybe he will wake up one morning and just like press a button that he shouldn't do. Do you know what I mean? Because he's bonkers, isn't he? I mean, that could send things off a cliff, couldn't it? That would. I mean, nuclear war. I mean, it's never really happened, has it? Apart from when the Americans did it twice. But otherwise, yeah, I would have thought that would probably do it. Yeah. All this Brexit stuff. Bit like the credit crunch, everyone's bored of it, aren't they? It's definitely hampering growth, isn't it? It's definitely hampering confidence. Yeah. Uncertainty. Yeah. I suppose if there's a cliff edge, i.e., they don't do a deal with the EU, and then all of a sudden we stop trading, you know, doesn't seem very likely though, does it? I don't think they really want to do that. I suspect there's a game of brinkmanship going on. Don't know. They always seem to kick the can down the road, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, they did it with Greece. It's not that now. Well, we'll call it this and then we'll come back to it in 3 years. So I wonder if that's what they'll do with that. Yeah.
Have you seen more properties on the market?
For sale? I tend to buy commercial buildings and convert them. Yeah, and that isn't really in that zone. On the low end sort of ones for sale, there aren't loads more, I wouldn't say. Not really. There's been a massive shift in the amount of people, well, I assume the amount of people buying them for rent. I think there's a lot less people buying them for rent. There must be, because the rents have gone up. Rob's just put a flat on. He used to live in it, and I think the last tenant was paying $650, something like that. Wayne's just taken, he said, oh, the tenant's gone. I'm recommending your new rent is $895. And I think the last tenant probably moved in 2 years ago. 2.5 years, yeah. So that's the result, isn't it? Those little things have gone to 750, 800, 775. They were at 550 2 years ago.
Yeah, but is that more mortgage regulations and the difficulty in first
time buyers? I think it is. Yeah, first time.
Yeah.
No, I think first time buyers, it's easier for them to buy. I think it's probably easier for them to get mortgages marginally. There's help to buy, obviously on new stuff, but they've probably got more help with the existing mortgages as well. I think most of it is less new landlords buying, and apparently most of them have been put off by stamp duty, the extra 3%. A lot of them,
yeah.
I mean, obviously quite a few of them have been put off by being able to offset the mortgage interest, which I think is a bigger thing. But lots of them don't know about that. It's just the negativity in the press around tax and buy-to-let. And yeah, obviously there's the new PRA rules as well. Yeah, definitely less than buying. Less supply, less buy-to-let properties, you know, supply, and therefore rents are going up.
In Peterborough.
not rooms, though. Rooms don't seem to have gone up. It's single lets seem to have gone up. Don't really know why. Yeah. I've never seen that in... Yeah, I've been doing this, 15 years, something like that. I'm probably monitoring it really well for 12 or 13 on the same house type. They were at 450 when I started 12 years ago. And they were at 550 2 years ago. Now they're at 775. Yeah, it's got to be this, I think. It all started March last year. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure loads of other Midlands towns have... the rents are banged up. we've just been behind you guys. You were at the end of the roller coaster. You sort of came over the top a while ago, and we're still sort of going up the other end of the roller coaster. Yeah. Well, sorry, the north of England. Well, they've sort of not come out of the recession yet. They're sort of going like that. We're sort of halfway up. Yeah. I don't know. It depends where you are, doesn't it? It's a more mixed picture now, I think. I've noticed it's a more mixed picture than I've ever noticed it being before. Might be because I speak to more people now, and I'm probably better at analysing it. But, you know, a lot of rents in London are falling, aren't they? And a lot of values in central London have been falling. I don't know if they still are. But on the outskirts, they're still rising. It's quite... I just think, I mean, what did London go up by, percentage-wise, you know, since 2010? It way more than 100%, wasn't it? So, well, these areas haven't. You know, these areas have, I don't know, since on paper, you know, the average prices, maybe they've gone up 30%. It's quite different, isn't it? Yeah, it's a huge gap. So I think there's probably still a lot of catch-up to do. Yeah.
Yeah, so either a combination of catch-up and or falling rents in London.
Yeah. Yeah.
And sort of dragging rents. This is actually having downward pressure on rents as well.
Yeah.
So I think we're getting a twofold
perspective.
So at some point, they'll sort of maybe balance out.
Yeah. Probably. Well, it's inevitable, isn't it? Equilibrium will be found. Yeah. And then it'll chug along. Yeah. They may have to reverse some of this tax stuff. And I suspect some of it is stamp duty on more expensive properties as well. Because you know, stamp duty on stuff over £1 million is massive now.
Yes, yeah. I think that's sort of wiped out the expat investors, foreign investors coming into London.
Yeah.
I mean, people are still buying, but not at the levels where they were, say.
Can't leave them empty now as well because of ATED. Yeah. There's just tax on everything. Yeah. Yeah, moving is an expensive game now. Yeah. I mean, even around here in a big house, it could be 80 grand, 100 grand to move. Well, how many years mortgage payments is that? Yeah. Who's next? Yeah, when? This is the $64 trillion question, isn't it? Yeah.
The other $64 trillion question is, given the kind of rises that Damien's talking about in London, this could be quite a significant correction when it comes, couldn't it?
What, in London or... Well, they've already had it. The central areas have dropped, what, 15, 20% since, what, in the last 2 years, something like that? Kensington, Chelsea, Knightsbridge, you know, the really good stuff, Mayfair, yeah. So they've had their correction. Well, you don't know how far it'll go, but yeah. No? Stamp duty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just turning off, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think stamp duty started that. So... they increased the stamp duty massively on properties over 930 grand. So, I mean, now if you're in a, I can't remember the threshold exactly, but say you're in a £5 million house, the stamp duty could be 10%, 12%. So you could be paying 500 grand stamp duty to move. So in those areas, it's become so gummed up and no one's buying them, because why would you pay £500,000 to move? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, it hasn't, has it? It's been really sort of, this is why I'm saying it's sort of fractious, isn't it? Those areas have been really affected, whereas for owner-occupiers, most of the rest of the country where it costs 300 grand for a house or 200 or 100, well, the stamp duty's gone down if you're an owner-occupier.
Right.
So the people who have been affected are the people who live in those really, really expensive areas in central London, A. B, someone who's buying for a second home because there's a 3% stamp duty surcharge, or, you know, C, buy-to-let investors buying houses, flats, HMOs, because they are in this 3% stamp duty surcharge. But, of course... people buying for their own home in the rest of the country, they're paying less. So that's probably why That's the main reason, isn't it? It was the government that did this one. Yeah. Usually is, though, isn't it? Well, they did. They did it with interest rates, didn't they? And, yeah. For stamp duty.
Yeah, for any of the tax changes.
Ian Duncan Smith has started some, you know, he's been making statements. There's a couple of others. Jacob Rees-Mogg, who is a Conservative backbencher, he's been talking a lot about stamp duty, as in those kind of high-end areas and reducing it. He could be Prime Minister at some point. He could be.
Local MP.
Is it? He's the local MP.
Yeah, he's a complete
matter. Is he? He does some good speeches. Does some very good speeches. I think there's probably those two at the moment, but it can't. These rent rises can't go on forever. At some point, the pressure on councils and, you know, tenants saying the rents have gone up so much, at some point they're going to have to accept that it's part of the problem is, these tax changes. So, I don't know, Shelter will make more and more noise, won't they? Hopefully it will be those kind of people that eventually will accept that this is what's doing it. Not force landlords to buy, can you? So what's the alternative? All right, you get the government to provide them with accommodation. Well, they've proven that they won't. So, yeah, they'll have to do something, won't they?
Let's see if those changes come before the next correction.
Well, stamp duty and...
when comes first.
Yeah. Well, they're not talking about doing any of it at the moment. I think she's done enough U-turns, hasn't she? Theresa, yeah. Every time she does a U-turn, she gets slammed for it for months, so... She's probably a bit scared of it all now. Although maybe she could argue it's not her U-turn, it was George Osborne's U-turn. I think it was the Treasury that thought it all up. You know, they cooked it all up originally. So it probably, maybe it needs to come from them. They'll come up with the, they probably won't reverse it, will they? They'll come up with the landlord special property tax relief. Do you know what I mean? And they'll say, oh, well, if you're a male or a female and you're sort of aged between, 18 and, 78, you're based in England, Wales and Scotland, then, this doesn't apply. They'll come up with something, won't they? Do you know? Rather than just say we're repealing that. And then they'll create a justification, obviously, because remember the justification they created for this. All this tax, they sort of said, oh, it's only going to affect this many landlords and it'll be the richest landlords and it'll be this, that, and it levels the playing field and, first-time buyers don't get mortgage interest relief, whereas landlords do, and it's unfair. As much as that was gobbledygook, I suspect they'll create a new narrative to justify effectively a climb down if they have to do it. Apparently it happened in Ireland and Australia. So they introduced this stuff and now they've reversed it. Yeah. Yes, apparently. Yeah. It was about 3 years, apparently. Yeah. That's secondhand. I haven't sort of dug into it myself. But I understand it was about 3 years and then they backtracked on it all. Yeah, because a lot of the time they don't understand the implications of what they've done. I mean, they say it was going to affect a small percentage of landlords. Was it 20% or something? Absolutely ridiculous. They'll just say, oh, well, it's had a bigger effect than we thought,
Let's hope this will run later.
Well, buy an unlimited company, use it to your advantage, buy them cheap. You may be able to get them off landlords cheaper. You'll be able to offset all the mortgage interest, won't you? Stamp duty, well, you just got to stomach it. If you're converting, it doesn't make any difference anyway. If you buy more than six, you get relief, multiple dwellings relief, or it can be sort of considered a commercial transaction. The other little quirk, which not that many people use, but I've realised this in recent weeks, because a friend was looking at buying a big house. I can't remember what it was. Let's say it was 3 million. It had quite a lot. It had some fields, some land. And the agent was saying, well, you can sort of class those fields as commercial. because, you know, if you there's some criteria, maybe you need to grow something on them or something like that. It then becomes a mixed-use property. And because there's an element of commercial, element of residential, it's mixed-use, and therefore the surcharge doesn't apply. So that is another little way around it. You need to make sure you're within the rules on it. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is you have to grow on it.
I think that might, the only restriction on that might, it might be with planning as well, because if that's deemed to be outside the curtilage of the residential, then you might have issues with that idea.
But yeah.
If it's perceived to be inside the curtilage, then yes, I can see that working.
Yeah, you need a stamp duty specialist, because it's a bit like VAT. It gets very complicated, and it is easy to misinterpret the rules and make a mistake. You need to get it right, that. And then they can persuade the solicitor, because a lot of the time the solicitor doesn't understand and says you can't do it. But if they get an accountant, stamp duty specialist, is it's all right, then they'll just go on his advice usually. Next question.
Seems like Peterborough, they keep saying Peterborough is now a suburb of London.
Do they? Where do they say that?
I think that Rob Walker said it.
Have you seen it anywhere else?
No, I remember seeing it somewhere. It's because the train lines are...
Yeah, the train is, next year it's reducing to 37 minutes.
So it's
they're putting new trains are going on the East Coast, okay. I'm always a little bit... the problem with trying to predict this stuff is you don't understand the full picture and how much of what it is you're looking at, i.e. HS2 is already priced in and all these other factors. But, I mean, has there been much growth around where the HS2 line is supposed to be going?
Keep sending us letters saying, will this affect you, blah, blah, blah. Not for 20 years now.
Oh, it's in 20 years' time?
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not going to be there anyway.
It's like we've got the M60 around Manchester now, and the trams moving out to different areas, which is a bit like the tube.
Yeah. I think stuff like that, if they do put it in, does make a difference. When they electrified the line here, apparently house prices went up 15%, because electrifying the line reduced the journey time quite a lot. So I think that stuff does. Big roads, you know, if they put a new road in and it's quicker and it allows a commute to somewhere big, Manchester or somewhere, that would make a big difference. They don't really build many new schools, and it doesn't seem to affect it that much, but having rental properties around schools and all that definitely helps. Hospitals, they built a new hospital here, and it definitely helped the rentals around that area. They put it in the middle of Breton, whereas before it, well, they're both in Breton, but they built a much bigger one. That made a difference. Very difficult to predict, that is. Yeah. It's the hotspot, the hotspot thing. Oh, this place is going to rise more, this place. You know, at the Olympics, it was all sort of priced in, everyone bought there, but they were sort of buying on the basis that everyone thought the Olympics was going there, so they were sort of paying a price.
It seems like the southwest of an area is the prime place.
Southwest? Oh, in the country?
I don't mean the whole country, I just mean if you go in the southwest of London, that's better than the northeast of London.
Do you know why that is? Because the predominant... the predominant wind in this country moves from west to east. So, if you had sort of factories and that sort of stuff years ago, they'd sort of, the wind would blow all the fumes and all the crap towards the east. So, I know whenever I'm flying, the wind is always... Well, usually it does move, but predominantly, it's sort of that way. It's about, 270, 280, something like that, degrees, which is west, moving east. It's westerly, heading east, yeah. So the industrialists and the landowners and all the wealthy lived on the west side of the town because they didn't want a ship blown over, yeah.
They did move in.
Did they?
That would have been a good reason to come.
Yeah.
They moved west slightly.
Yeah.
They could still see the ships, but they couldn't smell them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's what it is. Yeah. Apparently. Okay. So we're done then. Thank you very much.